from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Attorneys carry out their threat and lodge a federal lawsuit in the Elian Gonzalez case. WIPDECO admits there is dissatisfaction with its operations and why the American dream continues to elude many African Americans. I'm Ken Richards and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Lawyers for the Florida family of Cuban 60-year-old Elian Gonzalez this evening launched a federal lawsuit challenging a ruling from America's Immigration Service. The INS ruled that Elian should be returned to his father in Cuba. The 6-year-old was rescued at sea and then became caught up in the legal and political tug of war between his father in Cuba and the Florida relatives of his mother who died trying to sail to Florida. The lawyers went to court today to ensure, as they stated, that Elian would have his day in court. The case, Elian Gonzalez versus Janet Reno, is being billed as a landmark for the Miami attorneys, but legal experts are predicting that it's the start of a very long battle. Bernard Perlmutter is a professor of family law at the University of Miami. He explained to Malcolm Brabant why this case could run and run.
I think chances are that the Justice Department will aggressively defend and litigate the suit brought by the family.
So how quickly could this federal case be dealt with? And how quickly could any subsequent appeals be dealt with?
I'm fairly certain that the district court judge would want to review the petition, the pleadings, and any responsive pleadings filed by the federal government, schedule a hearing, hear argument, and then decide. Given the politics of the case, given the high degree of publicity from the world media, I would hope that the judge would rule promptly, and then there are further appellate remedies to the circuit court for the 11th Circuit in the federal circuit court system.
So how long could this go on for?
It's conceivable that this could go on for weeks and weeks, which would, of course, play into the calculated strategy of the family to draw things out until such time as Congress can consider a bill to confer citizenship upon Elian.
But is there anything that the government can do to try to speed this whole process up?
Yes, I think the government could seek expeditious ruling from the district court. There's, of course, nothing that the federal district court needs to do in terms of responding expeditiously. The courts, particularly in civil cases in the Southern District of Florida, frequently sit on decisions and give precedence to the criminal court docket, which is voluminous here in the Southern District of Florida. But in view of the exigencies of the case, the age of the child, to have a swift and prompt ruling, I would hope that the district court would rule very quickly. I think the court would probably want to bend over backwards in giving the appearance of fairness to all of the parties in the case. And for that reason, while it may find ample reason to dismiss the case and dispose of it, it still has to give a day in court to the family.
Bernard Perlmutter speaking to Malcolm Brabant. The Windward Islands Banana Development and Exporting Company, WIPDECO, can expect to continue shipping the fruit of the growers' associations in St. Vincent and Grenada and the Marketing Corporation in Dominica. But WIPDECO officials are frustrated by the insistence of the St. Lucia Banana Corporation to sell its fruit directly to Geest. WIPDECO Chief Executive Bernard Conybert, speaking from his London office, has acknowledged that the SLBC move reflects dissatisfaction with the operations of his company.
It does, and the dissatisfaction with WIPDECO, whether or not this is justified rightly or wrongly, has been made known for a very long time, and therefore the move by SLBC is not surprising. I don't think it would water down the role of WIPDECO. Certainly it is divisive. It would, in our view, weaken the position of Windward Islands, of the Windward Islands banana industry. But as to whether it is going to water down the role of WIPDECO, I don't think so.
So what exactly will be the SLBC's relationship with WIPDECO?
I would expect, depending on, finally, who SLBC sells its bananas to, the extent to which I suspect it might still require some things from WIPDECO, there would have to be some kind of arrangement that still involves WIPDECO.
What of the joint venture loan that is being paid back by WIPDECO and the Windward Islands? What continued role does the SLBC have as far as that is concerned?
For a long time, WIPDECO has not relied on any of the BGAs to meet part of the cost of this loan. And therefore, from that point of view, we do not anticipate any impact as far as our ability to repay that loan is concerned.
But how does SLBC working directly with GIST affect your operations?
Let me just say that no decision has been reached to the effect that SLBC will deal directly with GIST.
You don't anticipate a decision being reached on it?
I am not saying it would or would not. I'm just simply saying that at this point, a decision has not been reached.
There are fears that the move by the SLBC could lead to a trend with other banana associations following suit. How real a concern is this?
At the end of the day, what other companies or banana growers do will depend on what benefit is likely to be derived by SLBC by such a move. Our own view is that it is not going to bring any benefit at all to SLBC.
Meantime, the St. Lucia government representative on the WIBDECO board, Ambassador Julian Hunt, is disputing Mr. Conybeare's claim about the status of the Banana Corporation's new relationship with GIST. Ambassador Hunt sat in on the talks between WIBDECO, the corporation, and GIST in London. He says Corporation Chairman Patrick Joseph also held a separate meeting with GIST and Fives on the matter of bypassing WIBDECO.
I was present at that discussion as well, an agreement in principle to sell directly to GIST. So that this agreement is supposed to come into effect on or about the 6th of January at the expiration of the present sales and purchase agreement between WIBDECO and the St. Lucia Banana Corporation. So unless we sort of playing with words, let me make it clear that there is an agreement in principle and all that is required are the formalities in terms of finalizing this.
Ambassador Julian Hunt, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. In Dominica, electoral officials have confirmed that they are investigating some 22 names on the voters' list. The 22 are included in the total of well over 60,000 eligible to vote in the January 31st general election, less than 2 weeks away. There is concern that these 22 potential voters have registered in a constituency where they don't reside, Roseau Central. Chief Elections Officer Rita Serafin says the office is trying to verify the residential status of these voters. That matter was among agenda items for members of the island's Elections Commission when they met earlier today. Voter registration for the upcoming poll closed on the 3rd of January. It's thought that most of the 22 names being questioned were last-minute registrations. The UK supermarket giant Sainsbury's are planning to establish a large agricultural presence in Grenada. Sainsbury's are planning large-scale cultivation of organic food in the Caribbean island. Because of the size of the proposed venture, some are likening it to a corporate invasion. Orin Gordon has this report.
Sainsbury's have traditionally taken an interest in the banana side of things. Only Monday, they started selling bananas under the Fair Trade label. The fact that Caribbean bananas were not among them is down to the Windward Islands farmers' representatives, or geese, depending on whose point of view is correct. Last year, they started labeling Caribbean bananas separately on their shelves, and they've also looked at the possibility of buying organically produced bananas from Caribbean sources. The debate surrounding organically grown food, that is, food grown naturally with as little scientific interference as possible, exploded into life in the UK last year, with fears about the harmful effects of genetically modified foods. It's in this context that Sainsbury's are widening their interest beyond bananas. The London Guardian newspaper is characterizing their plans as another less aggressive invasion of Grenada. They're planning the cultivation of organic fruits to such a degree as to be a virtual takeover. Grenada's a good site for Sainsbury's because of the English language, because it's not that hurricane prone, and it's got a lot of uncultivated agricultural land. The corporation is looking to set up a similar operation in St. Lucia for many of the same reasons. Talk of a takeover is not entirely misplaced. Sainsbury's has an operating budget of almost $10 billion. That's 6 times the Grenada budget. The company has established itself as one of the leading supermarket chains in the UK and a business with a high corporate profile in general.
or in Gordon. Britain's ministry responsible for trade is trying to encourage more black and Asian business ventures in the United Kingdom to get into trade and investment in the Caribbean. The idea is that businesses launched by people of Caribbean origin living in the UK could make more trade inroads in the Caribbean. The initiative was launched in London by the Caribbean Trade Advisory Group, Caritag. One of the officials at British Trade International responsible for trade with the Caribbean is Trinidad-born Danny Gobedan.
This is a new initiative that we have taken at British Trade International to try and encourage Black Business Group to participate in our missions, in our seminars and in our workshops, means by which we can then let them know of the opportunities that exist for them out in the Caribbean. We are now going out and actually targeting Black businesses within the UK, telling them how we can help them, finding out what their needs are and trying to encourage them to build on what they have.
The Caribbean currently exports just over $1.1 billion worth of goods to Britain, but British exports to the Caribbean are still slightly ahead. UK officials are hoping that the new initiative will keep British exports ahead in the balance of trade.
I think that there are tremendous opportunities for bilateral trade between the Caribbean and ourselves. We talked about £950 million UK exports and £700 million imports from the Caribbean. I think the gap is going to narrow. And I think it will probably narrow it in favor of the Caribbean. We are optimistic that we could do quite a lot as a government and as UK business to help to promote the various sectors in the Caribbean.
Danny Gobedan of the British Trade Ministry and Caritag is planning a trade mission to Barbados, Antigua, Grenada and Montserrat in May. From the dog catcher to the White House, that's the American dream that has wooed so many millions of immigrants to U.S. shores. But for many African Americans, living the good life has been more than a nightmare, or more like a nightmare. Many members of America's black community find it impossible to raise loans or mortgages, while white America borrows like never before. As Leslie Goff reports, a new campaign has been launched to tackle economic exclusion.
I've been using the same bank for 10 years. And now they've turned me down for a loan over two late mortgage payments in 1994?
Nobody plans to get into a financial bind. And in real life, few of us have perfect credit. Call Upland Mortgage for really...
As this television ad for a federal home loan agency says, all of us can fall into serious financial trouble. People get labeled as bad credit risks, usually as a result of defaulting on a loan or because they regularly pay their bills after they're due.
When I was younger, I didn't realize the impact that having bad credit would have. Now I'm thinking about getting a house or buying a new car. If you have bad credit, you just won't be able to get them.
Understanding why this problem particularly affects African Americans isn't simple. Racial discrimination has meant that blacks are more likely to be unemployed than other groups. Unable to pay their bills, they become indebted, adjudged poor credit risks, and as a result are all but closed out of the financial system. This is why Freddie Mac, the federal mortgage agency, conducted a study into the problem and launched an education campaign with a group of black organizations, explains Freddie Mac executive Dwight Robinson.
What we're looking for, particularly to either develop knowledge or develop practical skills to follow good financial behaviors by intervening this way, we help the minority communities develop and obtain good credit and get all the benefits of that.
To order a complimentary copy of your personal credit report because you were denied credit, employment, or insurance within the last 60 days, press 2.
Credit rating agencies like this one, Experian, hold an enormous power. But Hugh Price, president of the National Urban League, one of the black organizations collaborating with Freddie Mac, says what also needs to happen is a wholesale change of attitude among African Americans as to how they manage their financial affairs.
Incomes are rising, unemployment is at an all-time low, and that is why we've got to make sure that, and that we are prepared, I should say, to participate fully by managing our affairs and also by continuing to knock down discrimination in home lending.
In the end, financial institutions will realize that it's in their own interest to make an effort to include African Americans. Evidence suggests the market for white homeowners is saturated. And if the banks and other lending institutions want continued growth, they'll have to figure out ways of increasing lending to people all but written off as poor risks.
Leslie Goff. Five Irish tourists who were ordered off a flight to Montego Bay have pleaded not guilty to charges linked to a so-called Airage incident last January. The five were thrown off the flight from London after the plane was diverted to Norfolk, Virginia, as airline staff reported rowdy behavior. The flight had then carried on to Jamaica, leaving the tourists stranded for 3 days in the States. Today, they appeared before a judge in London who granted them unconditional bail. The judge said the trial, expected to last 2 weeks, would probably take place at the Old Bailey. And that's it for this edition of BBC Caribbean Report. Just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
Join us from 11:05 GMT tomorrow for next morning programs. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.